that this woman called him about coming to be interviewed, and he thought I was the secretary. But that was Heathcote, you know. He was a very, you know, had a wonderful sense of humor. And I think deep down in Judd's heart, you know, he would have preferred that to work with men, but he was, you would never know that, you know. He was always gracious to you, and also so was part of there had Joe Kearney. Joe Kearney was athletic director. Okay, now, Jack Fusack was faculty athletic representative here for something like 25 years, I think, or 23 years, or it was a good long time anyway. And Jack Fusack was vice president of student affairs and was my boss, the big boss, under, because I work in a counseling center, and that was under Division of Student Affairs. So I knew Jack Fusack very, very well, and Jack wanted to retire. And Dr. Hardin was president at that time. And Dr. Hardin called me one day, and I knew Ed Hardin because I mentioned he was also part that came in here with Erickson to set up the student personnel program. So I knew Hardin from way, way back, and he knew I was on athletic council. He called me one day and said he wanted to see me, and well, I come over, and I went over. You know, I've been in Ed's office lots of times, talking about lots of things, nothing very serious, but we had a lot of fun together. And he said to me that, would I be interested in becoming, in fact, the athletic representative?
To the NCAA, or to the Big Ten.
To the Big Ten. And I said, I started laughing, and I said, whom have you talked with about this? And he said, how did you know I talked to anyone? And I said, well, knowing you, you would have, because I said, somebody has to ease the way. I said, if you just dump me in, this is my words, I said, if you just dump me in there on these men, they're going to have a heart attack. And he started laughing, and he said, yes, he'd called Wayne Duke, who was commissioner of the Big Ten at that time, and talked about it with Wayne Duke. And Wayne Duke said, there's no problem with him if I came in there as faculty athletic representative. And so Hardin named me faculty athletic representative. Now that brought a lot of publicity to this university all over the place. Mm-hmm. I was written up papers and papers all over. I was the first woman from a Division I institution to be faculty athletic representative. Wayne State had a faculty athletic representative, but that was a Division II school. And in a Division III school, there were a lot of women athletic directors that were in NCAA. But I was the only woman into NCAA in those days. Okay. So, now, you know, you have to learn. I told you I was always supportive, men were always supportive of me throughout this university, and always very good to me and helpful to me. And I was taught early days that you have to be political on a campus. People don't think a campus is political, and my God, it's the most political place that I know anything about. And I learned how, when I was in the steering committee of university and working with people, to be able to maneuver my way into and out of situations. Now, I don't know that if, I guess I learned it, I don't think it can be taught. Women, for the most part, in those days, were not very political. And you've got to learn to play the games. And I still feel that you have to learn to play the games, because I think there's a lot of game playing over there. And I think you got to know where some of the bodies are buried, and I think you got to know where some of the stuff is going around. And here again, there were always people there to help me. Well, going into the Big Ten, there were the men there. And the faculty athletic representatives' men were very supportive of me. I really didn't have any trouble with those guys. They took me right on, just like I was an old buddy of theirs. But the male ADs, that was the iffy kind of thing with it. And one of the guys, Don Canham, and let me talk about Don Canham for a minute. Don Canham wondered what in the hell Michigan State University was doing naming a woman, Don tell you this, to that position. And he was not very cordial to me in the beginning. Don Canham turned out to be one of the biggest supporters I ever had. Mm. And he'll tell you that to this day, too. We got along fine, but there again, I had to learn that you don't threaten them, okay? You don't threaten people. You don't get very far threatening people, I don't think. And that was their turf. Now, let me come back. I told you a while ago about AIAW, okay? I was on the Big Ten faculty rep for 2 years and then got named to NCAA representative from the Big Ten and was the first woman vice president of NCAA. And during that time, there was a move afoot in NCAA to integrate women. And I was part of that because I believe that NCAA, the women would get more advantages and more opportunities. Now, AIAW, this organization for women, were violently opposed to that. And just really, some of them were just violently. But what some of those women who were so strong in this did, they threatened the ADs on their turf. It's like, I'm going to take over your job. That was the feeling the ADs got, and the ADs just coalesced against them. Mm-hmm. And it was really a battle, and sometimes it just got downright dirty, really, with some of this, you know. It was subtle, and it's still there in football to this day. Football coaches simply don't want women around with any kind of power at all. And I had some power, let's face it. Mm-hmm. And I had more perceived power than I had power, but if it's perceived as power, it is, you know, that kind of thing. And so we started working toward integrating women in athletics. And I was cursed out in restrooms by women. I was called a bitch. I was told I didn't know what in the world I was doing, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I understood where they were. They felt threatened, too. And I understand that because the men were not very willing to give up a lot of their turf, you see. And they wanted some of their turf. Well, we got it passed, and women were integrated in NC2A. Mm-hmm. And to this day, they are, like Donna Lopiano, who is works at a national program for women to this day, you know, she's still bitter about it. Now, what has happened since then is Title IX came into effect, as you know. And Title IX, in essence, had a tremendous impact on on women and women's athletics and this kind of thing.
And the funding involved.
And the funding and that kind of thing. And as faculty athletic representative, I chaired this, came back and chaired the athletic council. During my tenure there with it. And the old story goes there is that Roger Wilkinson was in charge of athletics at that time, and he used to say, well, the only reason he liked to come to meetings that I called at 6:30 in the morning was because of the pecan roll. I like to cook. And so I would make pecan rolls on the weekends and have meetings on Monday. But anyway, that was part of it. You know, you do things like that. With it. But that was the most significant thing that I did in C2AA. And I was very receptive. Now, Walter Byers was director of NCAA at that time, the big honcho. He's not there anymore. And they were not including me and John Toner, who was athletic director under John DiBiagio when he was at Connecticut, was my great friend, and John Toner was president of NCAA at that time, and they didn't include me, and I just said, I'm going to be included. And of course, they started inviting me to lunch, and we're doing this kind of thing, and so they become, you know, there. But there were some people who were not too happy. The men were not too happy with there, and they weren't, the women who were most supportive of me were Division III women. And some of my best friends to this day were athletic directors of small universities. Uh-huh. And I like women and enjoy women, and I like men too. But I got to know those very well. Now, the other thing that I did in NCAA, which is important, is I just persisted in pushing NCAA to set up a research unit. And so that was the beginning of that, came from me pushing, and I chaired the first committee for NCAA on research, because that was also part of my background
in testing
and this kind of thing in the university. And I always would try to say in organizations, what could I do to contribute? And so those were the two main things that I did in NCAA. It was a great experience, because there never anybody, I don't have met any nicer people in my life than people in athletics. Even though there's men who didn't want me there, they never cursed me out. You know, they just went off and left me alone. They didn't tell the dirty sexist jokes when I was there, because I didn't like that. Mm-hmm. And on campus, what I tried to do was to keep us clean in terms of not getting into any trouble and academically. And fortunately, when I was there, we didn't get into any trouble, because I just couldn't stand the fact that if something happened under my watch, particularly with academics. And then when I left, not because I left, don't misunderstand me, we got into all this shit with, all this stuff with, on probation again, you know, with it. But that was the story on athletics, and I really, you know, enjoyed that. Now,
could you talk a little bit about the research unit? What were the main questions that were interested in?
Okay, they had a research unit at in NCAA then, and what they did at that research unit was to, and I guess I wasn't right in term, I wasn't first in setting that. I was first in setting the academic portion of it up. That's what they did was to injuries and all the kinds of things that, physical kinds of things.
They had that before.
They had that before. When I came, I insisted that they have a unit for the academics, and that's where I started. And that's studying graduation rates. So whenever you see anything in the paper that talks about graduation rates and stuff, that was what I did. Also, they gave money for funding for academic research, and I was helped decide who gets that and this kind of thing. So that's basically what I did. I'm glad you asked me to correct that, yes.
Do you remember some of the results of that early? What was the graduation rates, or were there anything surprising about those early?
No, because it wasn't to me, because I'd done the graduation rate for the Big Ten.
Oh, okay.
See, I started that at the Big Ten. I was the first. I did all the graduation rate studies. Every university in the country gave me the graduation rate study, with that kind of, and I did that. So I came in there with a background of knowing that, and they always shared all of that stuff with me. And the graduation rate, I don't know what it is now. In those days, for football, was about 41-42%. Basketball is lower than football, because they don't stay as long. It's a smaller number, and those kids transfer out. Now, that's public knowledge. You can always get that, what the graduation rate was, and I don't remember. But I studied the graduation rate of all the sports, not just football and basketball, women's sports and men's sports, and that kind of thing. The women always did better. And then on this athletic business, I got the, I guess we talk about what I did academically. The thing that means most to me personally was in 1973, I received the Alumni Distinguished Faculty Award. And I was the only person from Division of Student Affairs that had ever received one, and there's been no one since. Most of that's academics, and that was my, personally, that thing has meant a great deal to me. Then that was in 73, and in 78 I was named honorary alumnus. And then in 78, I think, something like that, I got an award from Faculty Women Association. And then in 2000, I was named to the MSU Athletic Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yeah.
Just recently.
Just recently. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
How'd you feel when you heard word about that?
Well, you know, I said to somebody, I said, at my age, I'm in and football and sports lingo, I'm in overtime. And I said, to be in overtime and get a touchdown is really glorious. Somebody laughed. I really appreciate it, and I'll tell you why. When that was set up at the university, I said to one of the committee members who was a lady, I said, for God's sakes, make sure you get women in there. And she says, Gwen, I'll try. Mm-hmm. And she came up to me, I think, a couple of years or 3 years later, and she says, you don't know how hard it is to get a woman in there. Mm-hmm. And I said, yes, I do know how hard it is to get a woman in there.
You would know.
And so when I got there, I thought of her, how hard it is to get a woman in there. Somebody was pushing me. I don't know who it was, obviously. I was deeply honored and very humble at receiving that, the award with it, but it's because I never expected anything at all like that. Well, I did, I always try to do for the university, and I never was out for a lot of glory for myself. I've been in the limelight a lot, but it's still not comfortable in it, rather be in the background with this kind of thing. Now, one thing that we didn't talk about was the Faculty Women's Association. Let me talk just a little bit. When I came to campus, I was probably I came here at the age of, 25, I think? I probably was the youngest woman faculty on the campus. And most of my friends, women, like Ruth Jameson, were 10 to 15 years older than I. But those women just took me right under their wing, and made me feel great. We had a kind of a women's group where we'd have lunch at the union. And that kind of grew into women. I wasn't in charge. I was president at one time of it. But it kind of grew into the Faculty Women's Association met in the union. Now, the men had a group, a faculty group, and they met also in the union down the hall. They didn't want anything to do with us. Here again, they didn't want anything to do with us. So we, for several years there, went on, and the men group met and the women met, and then the men said, well, all right, we got to do something together. So they set up the Faculty Association here, and everybody could join. And we all donated money to the university club because even in those days, we hoped there would be a university club for faculty. And we were charter members because they called and said, do you want your money back? We just said, some of us did, we just gave the money for the start of the university club. And so we were charter members. But that's how that got started. Then what we did there was to try to integrate younger women and grad students. We brought in grad students to be part of the Faculty Women's Association so the grad students could feel some kind of identity. And we ran noon groups in Student Services Building for a period of time in the 70s for women to come to talk about their concerns and this kind of stuff with it. Now, I was never as actively I was always part of it, but I was never as actively involved in setting this up as some other women were on the campus with it. But that's what we, did with this kind of thing. So, but I was always interested in women, and we'd go in here again at nights. What was a staff person here? His wife is still here, so I better not mention his name. They're divorced now. He called me one day and he said, Gwen, he said, men don't understand women very well, young men. He said, let's you and I team up and let's go in the residence hall at night and talk about sex. And I laughed. I said, yeah, I'm a single woman, yeah, it's all right. But what we do would go in and try to work with the young men about how you treat women and how you deal with them sexually and what, and also on the converse side with the women kinds of thing. Mm-hmm. 11 o'clock, that's when I went in. I didn't know when I slept. 11 o'clock at night, and come down into the lounges with their popcorn and pajamas, and we would sit there and talk about all this kind of thing. So I've always been supportive of women on the campus and, very active with them, but not really in charge. Some of this stuff. as I got older and got into the place for retirement, I've always said, you know, when it's time to retire. University, I was beginning to be a lot of concern I felt about meism. It's mine. Don't tread on my turf.
The turf battles.
You just have turf battles. And I really, as I told you earlier in this discussion, I never ran into that. I could not do today on this campus what I did in the 60s and 70s. You just couldn't do it because people are so concerned about the turf. And if I had been concerned about turf when the blacks were here, we would never have gotten it. We've never gotten the support. So that began to bother me. Now, the other thing that bothered me, we had, I think, for years, the best undergraduate education in the country here. Now, we still have a good undergraduate education, but I don't think it's about as good as Michigan. I think we're on the same par. We got concerned. Now, this is me now, just talking, my feeling. We got concerned with graduate students. And here I, you know, all my life I'd worked with undergrad. Now, like, I taught for the College of Education, so I worked with grad students too. But some of those things begin to, the times do change, and I know I used to work with people on change, and change is difficult for institution. Institutional change is terrible to do. But I knew there was time to change, and I also knew it was time for me to get out of there. So I left the university in 88, and it was time to go. And I, as I told you earlier, I revised 3 years. It took me, and Luann Simon Powers gave me money to do a fifth ADS examination. And then after that, I went to work for state police interviewing recruits, and then got cancer and enjoying myself now.
Could I talk a little bit about, ask you a little bit about some of the administrators that you worked with, and also some of the faculty members in the 1970s, in the some of the athletic council, when you heard first about some of the either the rumors as they developed and then the investigation. How were you and the academic council or athletic council involved in that, in the athletic problems under Dr. Wharton?
Well, Dr. Wharton decided, yes, we were involved with that, but Jack Fusack was in fact athletic representative at that time. Mm-hmm. And we were kept informed of the progress. Bert Smith was director of athletics. And Bert Smith, I'm trying to be careful. He probably made some decisions that were not the best decisions, you know, in the world. We all do, make certain kinds of things like that. And he had a group part of it that was his son-in-law, you know, was part of some of the things that were going on with the university at that time. Now, I knew a lot more about what was going on than the athletic council did, because some of that was not public and some of it has never been made public. Mm-hmm. And I will not divulge some of the stuff. But Jack Fusack always trusted me, and as did Wharton. So I knew a lot of what went on in some of those kinds of things with it. Faculty, Lord have mercy, this faculty in those days, I can't remember all the good people there were who helped. Jim Bonin, ag economist, was speech writer for Wharton, absolutely, totally supportive of me. That man was so good and so bright, I could ask him anything in the world. He was a tremendous mentor. Paul Dressel was a great mentor that I worked with in those days. Jack Breslin and I had our problems because Jack, athletics reported to Jack during this whole time with that. And Jack, you know, he probably did the best he could. He was really Hannah's guy in athletics. After all this thing was over, then I've helped Jack downtown with the black legislators if they wanted something. For example, the black legislators used to want all of our grades of our athletes. Jack called me one day and asked me would I go down to talk to one of them. And I went into, he's dead now, guy's office. And he says, "Oh, Dr. Norrell, what are you doing here?" And I told him what the problems were. He says, "Don't worry, I won't ask for them again. He had helped me. Young, who was mayor of Detroit, mm-hmm. was very helpful to me when I was running the Detroit projects. And one of my students was a student who didn't have any family, and Young had kind of took this kid under his wing. And this kid was a malingerer. And one night I got a phone call from the hospital saying, Stan is his name, I'll call him. Stan is in the hospital. Could you come help him, get him out? I went down to the hospital, and Stan says, call Young. So I called Senator Young. And Senator Young, you said, tell him to get up and get out. But Young was really supportive of me, and oh, I can't think of his name. He's old black legislator from Detroit. Those guys were so good. They'd come out and talk to me. Some of the football players, you know, if I wanted the football, Bubba Smith would come and talk to my kids, you know. So they were just absolutely super. And in University College people, Lord have mercy, I could never get all of those. I had to get my book out. Deans of the College of Education were very helpful. Erickson, you know, when he was over there. But I just remember, I can't remember all their names, but they're just great help, wonderful people. Mm-hmm.
What was your position on Proposition 48 at the time when it first came out? Do you remember what your reaction was to that?
Oh, I was part of Prop 4.
Could you talk a little bit about that? You were on the faculty rep at NCAA.
At NCAA at that time. Mm-hmm. And we had to do it. I had a problem with the testing portion of Prop 48. And I still have a problem with it because I know about tests and minorities. But we had to do something to see if we couldn't get up the graduation rates of it. And so I was supportive of it, helped to set it up and design some of the stuff that went into Prop 48 with it, and got maligned for it. The only thing that I can, when DiBiagio was president, the revision of Prop 48 came up at that, and I, on the floor of the Athletic Council, I'm diverting now, I got up and talked supportive of it. I was for it. Mm-hmm. And everybody on that floor knew where I came from. When DiBiagio was president, it was come to be a revision. I changed my mind and didn't want him to use testing, and DiBiagio asked me not to say anything, so I didn't. I did what he wanted me to do, so I didn't say anything with that kind of thing. But I think it was probably a move we had to make, whether it was, in retrospect, the best move or not, I'm not sure. But I think it did focus on some of the problems. Athletics is a very seductive kind of business, and I don't think that there are a lot of coaches in this country who really believe in the academics, because you've got such a win philosophy anymore, and that's terrible to say. I'm talking about football coaches now. I'm not talking about the coach of wrestling, the coach of gymnastics. But somehow, they just feel like that's all they ought to do. And I've had them tell me that. And when I was faculty athletic representative, I couldn't stand that. Rogers would stick his foot up on the desk and said, "You can't tell me how to run my program." I said, "Yes, Dale Rogers." I said, "Yes, I can tell you how to run your program, because if you don't do it, I'll go to president." And Polis and I also had some concern about that too. But it takes up too much. You know, I've changed my mind about something. When Mackey was president, I like Cecil Mackey. He's a great sense of humor. And Cecil Mackey used to always say to me, "Well, we got to pay these athletes." We'd argue. Oh, he and I would argue like mad. "You got to pay these athletes." "No, no, 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 no." I'm coming to the point where I think we're going to have to do something in terms of giving them more money to this. It's become a business, much more of a business than it was when I first got involved in athletics years ago.
The television dollars.
Television dollars are astronomical with what they do. And it's, you see, and Prop 48 coming in there, we're trying to say you've got to educate these kids. Now, I can map students through this university, and I always could in terms of getting a degree, because I know who taught what courses, I knew what they tried to do, I know they wouldn't put up with any stuff, but I know that they would help the kids. So, some of the kids in football, yes, I helped map them through and get them degrees out of here. But so many times, the kids aren't that bright. We have a best support system now than we had when I was there. It's much, much better because mm-hmm. of some of the stuff the university has put over there.
The Clarabelle Smith
Center?
Yeah, well,
they've hired different people and they've gotten in there with it. But it's just too much time spent. But it brings in, you know, another thing, and I'm sitting here thinking about stuff I hadn't thought about for years, and not very clear. I thought bringing the presidents in is control of NCAA. And I would fight against that today. Mm-hmm. There were some of us who absolutely believed that if you bring the president in, it's not going to get any better. Just let the phone ring. The machine will pick it up if it's important. Because they don't have the time to spend on it. But, of course, we lost that battle, and NCAA took over. At one time, when I went in there, the decisions were made in the Big Ten and in NCAA by the faculty representatives, in conjunction with the athletic directors, okay? Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the decisions are made by the presidents. Mm-hmm. Faculty athletic representatives and ADs, for the most part, don't have much say in the major decision-making. Oh. They don't have, they can make the everyday decisions, you know, as you move through and mm-hmm. who does this and who goes where on what bus and that kind of thing. The major decisions are made by the president. And in fact, I don't think it's any better under the president than it was when it was Ron. In fact, in some ways, I think it's worse. And I don't think Mac.